roll call.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Sansom?
Yes.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay. Item 9 on our agenda today is new business. Second reading, conditional rezoning. Consideration of second reading of an amendment for approval to allow conditional rezoning of a parcel located at 1 Water Street, subject to review and approval of the final development plan by the Planning Commission. So at this time, I'm going to turn this over to Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. As you mentioned, this is the second reading for the conditional rezoning request for the 1 Water Street project. This conditional rezoning request would rezone the existing waterfront marina district property that's owned by Cat Development currently to Central Business District. And what this would allow them to do is receive site plan approval for the resort cottage plan that the commission reviewed at the first reading back in June. Since that time, the Planning Commission has looked at the final site plan review just to make sure there were no bugs in it. And if it's approved today, they will again look at that final site plan next week. In the original plan, this was a 13 resort cottage structures that would have 15 units upstairs for long-term stays, and downstairs would be a mixture of motel rooms and commercial spaces, depending on the market demand for each of those, and that may fluctuate. In the Planning Commission review and approval, they looked at a number of things. They looked at the view sheds, they looked at the parking, they looked at the building height. In the parking, they gave them the 20% reduction per the ordinance standards that allow us to give that for mixed-use developments. And they also looked at the off-site parking that was approved with the previous plan, the 14 spaces, and decided that those could be eliminated, and they approved the elimination of those. Today, the focus is on the contract that's part of this conditional rezoning that kind of identifies their offer. That was provided in your packet. I won't go over it in its entirety, but there are a couple of things I would like to point out as things that I think should be reviewed and addressed. One of the specific things that I would look at is item 1 in section 5 that talks about the subject property is deemed to be a conditional rezoning, that being a land use that will, if not undertaken within 3 years of the date of adoption, revert to a use in conformance with the City of Blaine City Master Plan and zoning laws. I think the City Commission and developer need to have a clear understanding of what exactly is the establishment of that use. My interpretation would be the construction of at least one building and an occupancy permit for that building to establish the use. And then, you know, the rest of it can be built out as the market.
With a 3-year window?
Well, yeah, for the one to be built. Yeah, once they get that built, that use would be established in my mind. But I think the City Commission needs to have a clear understanding of what their expectation is in that regard. And then the other item that I would look at is an item 10 under that same section that says that the plan submitted with the and for the conditional rezoning offered and reference herein are preliminary in nature, and while it's an intent that they meet the rules and regulations that promulgate such a development, they are subject to final review and permitting by the city and several other agencies in such are subject to change. I would add a caveat to that that says final plans approved by the Planning Commission shall be incorporated in this document as Exhibit B. And that would tie specific plans to this contract. With that, I have no other issues with this, and the CAT team is here to talk more about and answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Glenn or Doug, which either one of you like to start? Address the commission and the citizens?
Doug Mansfield, Mansfield & Associates, 1212 Veterans Drive, Traverse City.
Again, I think Scott laid it out as well as the mayor did. This is our second reading after going through about 3-4 months of formal approval process and some discussions prior to that. We've given this development much required thought and care and consideration going through this. This is what we want to do. We feel that it meets the market demand of Dave, and it's economically viable and financially fiscal, which is an important thing in these days. So we're ready to move ahead, and we're hoping that we'll be granted approval for the conditional rezoning today. And Scott and I had a chance to talk about those last terms, and we're comfortable with that, as we are with the rest of the agreement. And so we can move on with the Planning Commission and final permitting and construction, hopefully this fall. So we're here, and if you have any questions.
And you're referring to item number 10, the caveat.
Correct. Yep.
The
final plans being incorporated.
Okay.
Glenn? Nothing to add. I feel like I've been here enough times. Everybody's probably sick of hearing me speak, but I certainly would answer any questions.
Okay. City manager, any questions? Any comments?
Obviously, the community has received well the first two phases that have gone up and are shown on the wall right now with the existing commercial building, the marina, and the project they're proposing now is half as successful as those. It would be another great asset for Boyne City.
Okay. Any other questions? Any department heads? Or staff that would wish to make a comment? Hugh.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the support of the Main Street Board for this project. It met in May, reviewed the plan, and has tremendous support for this. And this is being a great addition for the downtown and the community. And I particularly appreciate the community involvement that Mr. Kapp brought to the project.
Thank you, Hugh. Any other department heads wish to make a comment? Citizens' comments. Okay. This time we'll go to the commission. And Tom, you've been real close to this project, so I'll let you start.
I am in total support. I think it's the right plan. The right developer and the right piece of property and the right zoning tool to make it happen.
Laura?
Just a couple of quick questions, and maybe I know this is kind of maybe already been asked. On the first sheet it says construct 13 detached resort cottages. I thought it was 15.
13.
Is that a conflict?
13
structures, 15 units.
All right. That was where I was confused, and I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't a typo or something. And then also, where you're going to establish the use by building one unit, does that conflict with the one that says you're going to build them in threes? I mean, in other words, it says right here, phases in three units starting.
There's that's the clear intent because of the proximity of these units next to each other. However, I think Scott's referring to the legality of having one
of the three originally. Okay, that was just another.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that was just the other question. And then I guess thinking about your whole overall project with the swimming pool thing again, that will be fenced. So is that going to cut down on the view through there?
No, at all.
It's a 42-inch high glass.
Okay.
And I'm sure that'll come up with this. I know that view down Ray Street is very important. I know the Planning Commission is going to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was just wondering about I knew you'd have to fence it, but I wasn't sure if you were doing like a high privacy fence around it or whatever.
Yeah,
okay,
keep
all right.
That view corridor.
All right, that's all I have.
Okay.
Derek? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It was ironic that Scott drew our attention to item 1 of section 5 because that's the very thing that I had highlighted out of this whole contract. It appears that it was written with lessons from days gone by to protect everyone involved. So the old saying, how do friends stay friends of business, and get it in writing. And I think that project's fantastic. I've done informal polls, talking to various citizens, folks I know around town, and everybody was vastly more in favor of the separate units than the large building. So, as I say at the first reading, I think things happen for a reason, and this ultimately be better for you and for Boyne City in the end. So.
Okay. Jane?
Well, I'm supportive. Like I said before, this is a much better plan than the first one, so I'm okay with it.
Okay. Well, I'm in complete support of the plan, and at this time, if there's any more discussion to be had, we'll, I'll open to that. Otherwise, I will call for a motion to approve the second reading of this conditional rezoning from that.
I'll move for consideration of the second reading of the amendment and approval to allow conditional rezoning of a parcel located at 1 Water Street, subject to review and approval of the final development plan by the Planning Commission.
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you very much for all your time.
Congratulations,
yes.
Gentlemen. Good luck to you. And
thank you.
May the good Lord bless your project.
So far,
good weather this fall.
All right.
We'll give up our seats.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next item to do business today is the Park Street intersection. Intersection alignment. Consideration to rescind the June 12, 2012 City Commission vote on the Park Street construction project as it relates to Water Street intersection south to the alley and approval plan with parallel parking on both sides of Park Street between the intersection south of the alley. And who am I going to go to for the summary on this, Mike, or?
I think it would be probably most appropriate to, unless you want to give us a background just for the people that weren't there this morning.
Yeah, why don't you do a background on what we did this morning? Okay, that was intensive.
Yeah.
I'll say for these.
Well, recently the City Commission approved a concept for going forward with regards to the Park Street improvements. It's a project we received a grant for over $500,000 for, and it involved complete street reconstruction on South Park Street from the Water Street intersection south to Pine Street. After that approval, I requested that C2AE take the plans that they had basically outlined and presented to us in paper and with visual aids and mark it out on the roadway there so we could, by the intersection of Water and South Park Street, so I could get a better feel of how it was going to work. Once we got that laid out, it looked more difficult to get through the intersection than we would have anticipated. We started visualizing several traffic conflicts that would be out there that we didn't anticipate before, so we kind of learned from it. And since then, the Main Street Board met in a special meeting down at that site, and this morning the City Commission met there in a work session on that site to basically look at the site, get their own feel for what they thought, how that approved plan was going to work, and then consider options to make the situation better. And we looked at a number of options, had discussions with our engineer. We had local business people there as well, too, represented from several city departments. And since that meeting, which began at 7 o'clock this morning and ran to about 8:15, Larry went back to his office, took the comments that we were all talking about, and tried to put them in some type of option format that the city commission could consider. The project is currently out for bids right now. Those bids are due back August 1st. We had some brief conversations with the commission about possibly coming back at a special meeting on August 7th, which is 1 week in advance of the regular meeting, to try and to see if we were at a point where, one, we finalized on a version that we want, and we're at a point where we could approve bids. We have some concerns as a staff with regards to when we start construction. It's going to be a long project because of all the work that's involved. And if we start too late in the fall, we're concerned that it might not get completed. And if we get to a certain point, the staff's recommendation will be just hold off on it until spring and then do it at that time, and just run right in through the winter. So right now we're here to hear, have Larry present as to what he's come up with since our morning meeting.
Before we hear from Larry, Hugh, did you want to weigh in on anything? I know you did the summary for us here.
So you've all had it, and there's been a lot that's transpired since that memo was written, so I think it might be good for...
Okay, I'll turn the floor over to Larry then.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Larry Fox with C2AE, and I have basically three options to go through based on our discussion this morning. And then, obviously, there are little adjustments that can be made to any of these plans in terms of sidewalk widths being 8 feet or 10 feet or 7 feet or lane widths and all of those things to keep in mind. But I believe we, based on our discussion, there was talk about three options, and I wanted to go through those individually and talk about pros and cons and also answer any questions we can about those so that we can come to a decision on these. Now, I believe all of these three options will provide better alignment and traffic flow than the one that we looked at this morning. So I do believe all of those will provide that. And then let's get into a little more detail. This is one that we didn't get a chance to do any work on this morning. So I'm presenting you this older plan. So dimensionally, you can still get the idea. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm going back here for a second.
Which plan was that, Larry? The older plan.
The one I want to find is at the last meeting we looked at a rendering that was actually when I came to the meeting was the proposed plan, and it was parallel parking on both sides of the street. Okay. And maintaining the existing alignment. And the reason I'm starting with this basically is because this is the one that the Main Street Board provided you with a recommendation that that was their preference. So, in due respect, I just wanted to bring this to your attention first. So, the concept of this plan is that we would have maintain the three lanes of traffic. That is a straight through right turn, a left turn only, and a southbound straight through. We would have parallel parking on both sides of the road, and in doing that, would have a total of 8 spaces. And I'm really going to focus from Ray Street north here, because I think that's really, really, really the only issue is. So we have in that layout, and by keeping pretty much the same alignment as we have now, maintaining the existing curb bulb outs as they are, we have the ability to provide parallel parking both sides of the road, maintain three lanes with a decent alignment opposite the intersection, and then also have some widened sidewalks. In this particular case, we could have a 10-foot sidewalk on the east side of the road along the Ace Hardware within the roadway. We could even have up to a 13 to 15-foot wide sidewalk on the west side of the road adjacent to the O'Brien building, and have the opportunity there to provide some trees or landscaping or other areas. So this is, I guess, the most pedestrian-friendly, provides a little more gathering space, that type of thing, availability for use if perhaps this building were to change function of outside cafe, seating, you know, displays, those kinds of things. So this is what this option would do, and would lose two spaces over the existing configuration. Okay, so before I, any questions on this particular option before I move on?
Now the way this is drawn out, then the O'Brien side actually comes out to the same distance out as in front of the old train station. Am I correct on that? I mean, it looks as you go on the other side of the alley, then it's pretty much the way you have it drawn. It lines up now. Now it sets back. So
we can't have a straight alignment on that side.
Yeah.
What happens is we gain extra room for the angled parking because we're eliminating a lane by the time we get back.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks like that the cars line up.
Yes.
I mean, your parking lines up then.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Another option that we talked about this morning. Oops. We put our aerials underneath these too, because I think they become clearer too as to how it works with the existing. Okay, this is what we referred to as option A. We didn't have time to do any of the fancy coloring, mm-hmm. or actually you can see it's a little bit unfinished. But okay, what this does is now I've added some dimensions here. This is what was previously option two. And this still allows for the three-lane configuration. You can see there is a couple-foot offset on those lanes that you would have to adjust to across the intersection. It's not perfectly aligned. But we would have here, on these dimensions, I'm not sure. Okay. Well, anyways, there's some drafting thing here. But okay, we have a 10-foot sidewalk, which is to the back of curb, a 19-foot parking space, which is the back of curb to the edge of the back of the stripe. We have an 11-foot travel lane for southbound, a 10.5-foot left turn lane, and an 11-foot travel lane for northbound with 8.5-foot of parallel parking space and a 10-foot sidewalk. Again, this could be adjusted to 8 feet of sidewalk on each side and provide a little more lane space. But again, this is another option, and it does maintain the existing configuration and existing curb openings.
And
the left turn.
And net gain or loss of parking?
The net gain or loss would be as is, mm-hmm. only it is shifted from one side to the other, and we still will have to deal with this issue that's been brought up, which is a valid concern. We didn't get the crosswalk back in here, is that this space, someone would back out and cross mm-hmm. the crosswalk in order to back out mm-hmm. to pull through. And it could be a conflict with pedestrians. We have a couple ways that we could adjust that. One would be to take this bulb out further, eliminate that space, but then of course now we're down to a loss of one. Or we could make this a barrier-free space that would probably be used less often, and so minimize the conflict, but still the potential is there. And you would have your 5-foot van accessible on this side to write a little more space.
Mike, did you have a question?
I was going to bring up that point when staff was met after the morning meeting. We talked about that with this scenario, that first parking space off the corner there next to Pat O'Brien's offices as a potential handicap spot to replace the one that's currently down by the Ace Hardware building by the alley. That would make sense if we were going to try and use this layout to put a handicap parking space there and maybe ramp it in so they could actually get right into the bump out there.
There, could you put that discharge for a van so they could land the rear of the sidewalk there, seem to a parallel spot?
I don't believe that you can do that because we've got a curb there. You have to have a flat area for them to access the van. And I don't think we can go on to the sidewalk to do that. I would have to check those regulations. I believe we have to have no more than 2% across that whole thing.
Now, is that with a 45 or 55 degree
angle? This is 45 degree angle parking. One thing, one additional piece of information I will throw out there for parking and lane configuration is this morning I went back and checked a couple of different resources for recommendations on parking. And for a travel lane in combination with a 45-degree angle space, the recommended total distance is 30 to 33 feet. Okay, so you can see here by a 19-foot space and 11-foot lane, we would be at the minimum of that. So potentially, someone in the left turn lane, someone could back out and not have to worry about hitting that vehicle, but it would be tight. Okay, further discussion on this?
Yeah, I got a question. I drove that intersection a half a dozen times this morning after it was finished, and just looking at this plan here, and I drove it from north to south, passing through the intersection, and when I was in front of Provisions there, I moved over as far as I could on the right-hand side of the road, and it looked to me like that bump out on the southwest corner there is probably 12 to 18 inches wide, you know, further east than the bump out that's on. So to give yourself that extra lane width, why couldn't you take 12 or 18 inches off that bump out and take a little bit away from that sidewalk?
We can. We can do that. And you're right. You can see on the alignment, if you project this line, that it does come back further.
Yeah, you could have perfect alignment of that by taking a little bit off that bump out, or probably a foot or 18. I'm not sure how much it is, but I was eyeballing it, and like I say, I went by there a half a dozen times just to see, and you're basically showing it that way, too.
You know, again, there are a lot of variations to this. In my opinion, that if you can get by with an 8-foot sidewalk, I would prefer to have a 13-foot lane here, if this were the configuration, just to allow for not impeding on that left turn lane from back.
Any other questions?
Let me throw I said I had the aerial behind me, so let me throw that one up there. Okay, so I just wanted to point out, you can see what the changes are, and you can see what we talked about this morning is what's driving this whole, pushing this whole thing over. Obviously, a 10-foot sidewalk is about 4 feet out further than the existing. These diagonal stripes are about 14 to 14 and a half, as opposed to these, which are 19 total back of curb, and we've got a 2-foot curb in there. Mm-hmm. And so you can see, but this, I was just wanted to show you that this alignment, you know, does line up pretty well with the existing. You can see, although it switches obviously where the cars are, and does shorten this sidewalk compared to what it is now. So now I will move on to the third option that we talked about. Okay, now this is, I would say a maximizing parking configuration. And the difference that you see with this compared to the others is that we are down to two lanes of traffic on the south side. So we have a straight through right turn, left turn lane, and a straight through southbound lane. Mm-hmm. And what this does is these sidewalks are shown at 8 feet, both sides. It allows for a 19-foot parking space and then a 13-foot lane both sides. So we have adequate lane width to back out and maintain in your own lane on both sides. Mm-hmm. We gain a net of 2 parking spaces, although we didn't get them in here yet. We may have to go down to like a 9 or 9.5 foot width to get back, because you can see that these are shown at 10, and these are obviously not quite that wide.
Are the lanes right now 45?
Yes, they are 45 now. You can see how well they line up with the 45 here. And so drawback to this, whatever, but the biggest change is obviously eliminating that designated left turn lane, and then having the potential of, if there is a lot of traffic through and someone here wanting to turn left, that vehicles could be backed up here. So it's really a matter of how much traffic does that get and how often does it get it. If it's just a couple times a day, can you live with four or five cars stacked there or more? Or is that really not an issue? So you do have an offset. It is not quite centered in this left turn lane, but you know it's reasonable. So that this vehicle turning, going straight through, would make this turning, this movement. The vehicle going straight through on the southbound would make a slight adjustment to the left. Mm-hmm. And then the vehicle turning left would be not directly opposed by a left turner, mm-hmm. unless he were to, or he or she were to, kind of pull out in this direction.
Larry, does that current design you're showing based on 10-foot sidewalks or at this point?
This one is 8 feet.
Okay,
so essentially 8 plus 1 on this side, 9 in the building.
Yes, it's 8 feet in the right wing. Okay. Yeah. So
okay.
Eight feet west and 9 feet east with the additional
with counting. Mm-hmm. Yes, counting against the building face, right?
Okay.
And that's how we got the 13-foot lanes, because the previous addition where we had the 10-foot sidewalks had 11
lanes. Right, 11 too.
I'm sorry?
In front of provisions, you get 8 feet.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So it would match that.
Mm-hmm. That would match the same parking lane width from the curb from the provisions on the other two locations?
Yes, very
close. For uniformity?
Yes, okay. We have a slight shift in right-of-way width here. This is 82 and a half feet. Mm-hmm. And when you get to here, this is 80. So we got a little bit of offset.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Close to alignment.
Okay.
This sidewalk, obviously, on the east side over here is a little wider. Mm-hmm. There's only parallels.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask you a quick question on that? First, angled parking spot on the east side, which cuts into where the bump out is, it shortens it. Would that be possible just to designate for small compact car sizes there or anything
this
like
one
that?
Actually, what I didn't get it, we didn't get a chance to make this adjustment, uh-huh. but I would take this and make this a 90.
Oh, okay. All right. No, all right.
Just
I was
try
just
to
wondering
fit that
about
space
that.
Back in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Okay. I'm going to throw this in here, but if we adopt this alignment or the previous one, mm-hmm. and if we make it with 8 foot sidewalks, mm-hmm. you can the configuration of the curb layout will be mm-hmm. identical. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. this is not. Yes, it is. This is the correct one. If we make this an 8 foot sidewalk, and this an 8 foot sidewalk. And these curbs and mm-hmm. the curb opening will be in the same place mm-hmm. on those options.
No,
so then the only thing we're dealing with here is paint markings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you adopted this option and it mm-hmm. were to not work out well, we could restripe it and go to the two-lane option or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the one benefit of, mm-hmm. of that.
Option two is
option two, option four are essentially, if we go to 8 foot sidewalks, we'd have essentially the same curb layout, either option. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes just paint markings.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm saying is adopt a selection of one of those does not rule out going back to a different one. Selection of mm-hmm. the parallel parking on both sides does.
Okay.
Do we have any questions for department heads? Staff?
Are we saying questions for or comments from?
Or comments.
Mm-hmm.
Questions.
Mayor?
Yes.
I believe we should either go with this option or the option A. I don't feel we should limit ourselves by removing the left turn lane from the picture. I think that's going to cause more traffic flow issues that I think will send us back in time from where we are now.
Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
I'm in agreement with Andy on that. The three-lane option, to me, is a safer option rather than going to the two-lane and eliminating the left turn. I think ultimately with two lanes, you may end up bumping a lot of traffic over to East Street, which has visual parities and makes it tough for people to make the left turn there. If you get traffic backed up in the two-lane situation, I think that's directly where they're going to go. Seems to be a, you know, it is a main thoroughfare there. We do close the streets from time to time. Traffic picks up. In those situations, this would alleviate those problems also. I think the three-lane and the line, the alignment of the lanes is probably the safest, in my opinion.
Thank you. Dan?
Just one more comment to go with what they've already told you. That street was a two-lane intersection, I believe, about 30 to 35 years ago. When we did the first downtown renovation project, there was a concern of that intersection, and we went to a left-turn lane in that intersection. It hasn't been an issue or a problem since it was put in place 30 years ago, and traffic in that area is going to do nothing to get worse. It is going to be less. I don't think it's a good idea to go backwards.
Thank you, Dan. Barb?
I'm in favor probably more of this plan. I like the better alignment through the intersection. Here at City Hall, I have been on the receiving end of emails and calls about alignments in different areas of town and people not being happy. Those comments don't always make it as far as the commission. We usually get the brunt of it here. And I think as far as the concern of the pedestrian crosswalk and the cars making a right turn off Water Street could be addressed with doing something different with that first parking space to give a little more room there, if that's the main concern.
Thank you, Barb. Scott?
Way back when these first came out, the Planning Commission did look at these. And this was the particular option that they recommended. I still concur with that recommendation as well. As Barb pointed out, I think the concerns about the pulling out of that first parking spot can be addressed, and that's really the major drawback perceived for this particular design.
Thank you, Scott. Any further comments from staff or department heads? Okay, we'll go to citizens now. Mr. White?
Well, I'd like to talk about the fact that this is a net zero gain. That if you're going to park on both sides, you're just a gain of two. And the amount of traffic on this row intersecting here, Park Street, is a fraction of what it is on Lake Street. It's debatable whether it's more than East Street over there, but on East Street we have a two-lane meeting a three-lane highway with, I think, a lot more traffic than crossing that bridge right there. So I, you know, speaking for the merchants who want more spaces for people to be able to park by them to walk to their blocks, the double-angle parking is what I think is better. What Larry just pointed out is that it can always be changed to this without doing any curb changes right there down the road. But that's my belief, is that we're going to gain by not being by eliminating that turn lane and not have traffic jams like you have in Traverse City or big towns.
Thank you, Jim. Andy?
I would beg to differ with Mr. White's perception that there's more, as much or more traffic on East Street. That's, in my opinion, is totally not true. I'm out and about town different times of the day. Most of the time, East Street's a ghost town. Very little traffic, whereas Park Street has always got traffic flowing on it. Most people don't turn left off of East Street onto Water Street because it's a pain. I do it occasionally and kick myself, so why don't you just turn right and go back around the block, because the visibility issue there is terrible. So it doesn't get the straight through traffic that Park Street does from north to south. And it's also kind of a pain to get across the intersection going from south to north. So most people do not use that street, they use Park Street.
Thank you. Cindy.
Mayor, I would like to speak as a citizen, because parking and traffic is not my area of expertise. But I use that intersection several times on a daily basis, and I really feel that the left turn lane is necessary. I purposely avoid East Street for many reasons, so I use that, you know, even turning right, left, doesn't matter. If you're trying to make a right turn and you've got pedestrians trying to cross, you're still going to be backing up traffic. So I would really like to see the left lane left in place.
Thank you, Cindy. Mike.
I think when you're talking about East Street or Park Street, you're really talking about, it makes a big difference if you're talking about north or south. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about north of either of those two streets, I would probably say that East Street's the busier one of that, just with the movements that are going through that. Mm-hmm. On the south side, it's definitely, from my perspective, Park Street. That's where I think you start running into the ghost street that Andy was referring to. North side, south side, completely different. And the movements through the intersections are completely different with regards to that as well, too. I would also comment that we had a number of public information meetings with regards to that. This whole project, one end to the other. And I specifically raised the question, because I've dealt with it on the other projects that we've done around the downtown. How much pressure or how much of a feeling was there for additional parking as part of this project? And at those meetings, there was no indication or pressure for additional parking spaces. There was a transition with regards to moving from the downtown area at Water Street, making it, still maintaining it at more of a downtown feel, kind of up to the alley as you're working your way south, starting a little bit of green kind of in the railroad office building, and then continuing that when you get into the parallel on both sides south of Ray Street. I've been in on this road with regards to parking on other sides. I've been lobbying for additional parking, because that's what I heard when I first came to town and when we first did the road projects. That is backed off as an issue with regards to it. I agree with Commissioner Gaylor's comments earlier. If we build more parking spaces, they will be filled. Mm-hmm. But again, we're trying to find that balance of what we do to maintain a successful downtown area. Whatever we build here is going to be with us for another 20 to 25 years. And the balance we have to have is for pedestrian and commercial. In the past, and we've talked about it at Planning Commission and different developments we got around town, we've emphasized, and in my opinion, we've overemphasized vehicle traffic to the detriment of pedestrians. We've kind of moved beyond that in Boyne City in the last decade or so. It wasn't that long ago that the City Commission directed me to do something with regards to pedestrian crossings on Lake Street to encourage pedestrian circulation in the town. That's why we're adding sidewalks all over town. That's one of the main reasons we're doing this project and creating this whole hullabaloo, is because we're widening the sidewalk to get pedestrians from the south end of town to downtown. So I don't want to underestimate the pedestrian importance. I concur with the staff that has already spoken to you. I don't know if you've spoken or conveyed what the Main Street comments are yet, because they were originally suggesting another option. I concur with this. And I like the possibility that there is flexibility there, that if for some reason we think that there is another option that we want to do or try, you just stripe it out and try it with paint. So what's going to be built there should be this. I prefer this layout. If you tried the other one for a while, you could do that. But again, I think you've got pretty much the unanimity of the staff saying that don't go back to something that didn't work before and read and forget what we learned before when we first created turn lanes there. And if you go back to some of these pictures, And I'm looking at the one right above Laura's head right now, and I keep trying to figure out how they got there. They had angled parking on both sides of the road. We had it. No, right next to you, between you and Cindy.
Yeah.
I mean, you see clear as day that we had angled parking on both sides.
That's my dad's old car, too.
What's that?
That's my dad's old car.
48 Kaiser Fraser?
No.
I don't know if it was in for an oil change or what it was doing there that day, but again, you look at the street, and there's plenty of width there. You look at that one car that's traveling towards the post office there, there's plenty of width. Mm-hmm. And the reason there's plenty of width is, one, there isn't as much traffic on the road, and there isn't a center turn lane. Mm-hmm. You know, because I kept looking at pictures down by the old Dilworth when they had the boulevard in the street there between the buildings there. And I keep thinking, gee, that'd be neat to do. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, we've got traffic that likes to go up and down the streets.
Small traffic, smaller cars.
Well, I don't see any trucks in that picture.
No.
Sidewalks are smaller in that picture also.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. They were.
Dan?
I've just got one more comment and question for Larry. I think the narrowest you have a sidewalk on both sides was 8 feet.
Correct.
And we could move the one sidewalk back to 8 feet to allow some flexibility if something changed. That's not a major issue. But there's something that was raised downtown this morning. It's one of your questions. And there was a push for a long time to have wider sidewalks in district. There was an ordinance that called for 12-foot sidewalks for about 100 yards throughout the downtown district. That was specific and it was intentional. In most places we have a building because we don't have that much room from the buildings to where we have to put the curb lines on. But the intent has been to maintain as much sidewalk as we could.
So this plan here, as we're looking at it right now, is 10. It could go to 8 if necessary.
Right.
Without a big expense.
But if we start talking 7, 6, or 5 feet, that hasn't been the intent for downtown district.
Now, the 10 that's on the east side of the street, the Base Hardware there, that is 9 plus 1, or is that 10 plus 1?
10 plus 1.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I've been pushing the planners or the engineers for a number of projects to narrow the width on lanes so we don't have them overly wide because it slows people down. And in the downtown, you want people to be going slow. You want them to be extra cautious. You don't want them to think that they can barrel through there. We don't want people barreling through an intersection where people may or may not be coming out, where cars are going to be moving in and out. Sometimes by making things safer or more convenient, you actually make them more dangerous because people, they don't focus on it. I would like people to be going fairly slowly through the downtown area, both from stopping and looking to see what we have to offer, and two, just because I think it promotes more safety, both vehicular and pedestrian, with regards to that. So I'm a proponent of the wider sidewalks the way they are now. You could pick up the extra space, and yeah, people will be able to get up and down them. But I think that it limits your options with regards to what you do on the sidewalk. You can't do anything else in the road other than drive a car up and down it. Mm-hmm.
With a 10-foot sidewalk on the east side there, would there be an option for a couple trees in there, or would they be shaded too much from the building or cause an impediment? Is there enough room to do a tree well? And wells like we've done on some of the other streets with flowers?
I believe we have about, I think those tree wells are 4 feet square. Mm-hmm. To the back of curb, it might be a little more, because we've got a space in between there. 6 feet. So if we had a 10-foot sidewalk and took up 6 feet with a tree well, then we're only leaving 4 feet of space to get by it.
But you got 11.
But you could walk on
actually
a tree.
Have 11 though on the
east
side there.
That's correct.
And you say they're 4 foot square?
4 foot square, but then we have a soldier course of, we have a,
the actual grade is 4 feet.
Between there and the curb, yeah.
And then we've got a concrete header, and then we've got a soldier course that will have a paver sidewalk. So it sets it back to 6 feet off.
And?
That would make it pretty much impossible for us to get our snowblower down to there in the wintertime. We'd be bouncing off a tree or a building.
Okay. We used to have some roundabouts. That was good.
Some what?
Some round tree wells. Dan?
Ron, I believe on some of our previous projects, we used a 4-foot tree well, and on the last couple of projects, we went to a 5-foot, and I believe that was a recommendation from the agriculture people to maintain the tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have any additional citizens' comments? If not, we'll go to commission and start with Tom.
I think that I am in favor of maintaining a left turn lane. I'm also philosophically would like to maintain maximum sidewalk width. And the reason is because that's what, planning-wise, what Scott has sent us through many, many training sessions, and you want to create walkability. You want to create a downtown sense of placemaking. You want to create, look how crowded the sidewalk is in front of Red Mesa, and that's probably 12 feet on a busy night. This is the main intersection of town. You always have to plan for long-term range. What if Jim White retires and sells his place to a restaurant, and then Lexington opens up that whole wall for sidewalk dining? I mean, there's just tons of options that you have to look down the future. And the bicycle shop, North Country, you know, that may never always be a bike shop. Pat O'Brien may not always be. My point is, you have to design for maximum width, for flexibility, and then the right or the left turn lane, I think, is critical to keep. So, whichever plan works, I guess this one, angled on Pat O'Brien's side and parallel on Jim White's side, left turn lane, and maximum sidewalk width is what I would be in favor of.
Gene?
I also like this plan originally. I wasn't exactly for it, but after it's been explained and we looked at it, I would like to see the left turn lane also. And I do like this plan. Simply that can be changed with striking without going to a lot of extent.
Here.
A couple of issues on this topic. The first is a process issue. It revolves around the Friday morning meeting that was held. I believe there's only one commissioner that was notified of that meeting. It's part of that process. I know I didn't get called. I'll let the other commissioner speak for that.
What was the other commissioner? Who was the commissioner?
They got notified of it?
Yeah.
I'll be happy to answer unless they want to speak up. Commissioner Town.
No, I wasn't notified of the meeting. I went downtown and I met with Hugh on it and also met with Jim on it, but it wasn't in a meeting.
All right. I thought you told me that when the mayor contacted you to tell you about the meeting.
No, he said there was a meeting, but I didn't go to that meeting. I called you, and I met with you down there.
And, well, the city manager indicated that he had received information from Larry Fox and that it was going to work. His next step should have been to come directly back to the city commission at that point. I'm not sure how Main Street got involved again on the process. But to create a vote that we had already voted on at the city commission level. So, that was one of my comment on the process that happened. Secondly, just this morning, Commissioner Niedhammer made a comment about parallel parking in front of Red Mesa and how he sometimes has to sit and wait for 5 minutes while somebody backs up the parallel parking. I would think that it's pretty obvious that going into a store like Ace Hardware, there's a lot more in and out traffic than on the other side of the street, if we're going to compare. And it's clearly the easier to get into and out of the angle parking versus parallel parking. Commissioner Sansom brought up a valid point that you're going to get a lot of work trucks there, bigger trucks, things sticking out the back. They may encroach into the spot behind them. The parallel on the East Hardware site causes more problems than things it solves. Clearly this morning we also verified looking at the sidewalk width of 8 foot with a plow, a vehicle with a plow in the front, that there's plenty of room even with that situation for pedestrian traffic, and that solves one of the issues that I brought up at prayer meeting about folks coming down from Litzenberger down into the downtown area. The 8 foot would clearly solve the issue as well. It needs to be kept 10 in front of the co-op. I suppose that could be discussed, but right here, and that would open that back up. I've heard comments on the 3-2, but I've got no empirical data that says that would be disastrous. Larry Fox had asked him specifically at the last meeting about that issue, the angle parking down there going to two lanes. We voted on the 3, but the two lanes, yeah, we might have to wait a short time, but I don't think it's as detrimental as being passed along here. So we're taking away potential parking spots. And Larry also said we can, it's just a matter of striping. I would recommend we go to the 8 foot sidewalks. We've clearly addressed putting the handicap spot on the north side of the other angle parking. By dropping down and putting angle parking, we gain at least two more over what we have now that we voted on, and four more than this one.
So you think, say, this plan right here with 8 foot sidewalks is what you're proposing?
No, go back to the one that we've, the last one there. Thank you, Larry. Right, because if you look on the northwest section there in front of Boyne Provisions, that is an 8 foot sidewalk with the same dimension parking stalls as was proposed down there. And
so it'd just be perfect alignment.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you gain more spots. I think the 3-2 lane is being presented in a far more negative light than in reality that it probably will be.
Okay.
So if we went with this, and then Larry said, if it's determined that absolutely could not work, it's just a matter of a striping issue, and but I would recommend that we start on this one right here.
Okay. Laura?
Well, I guess I got a couple of comments and a couple of other questions. On this particular plan, and I know there's a lot of people who would like to keep that middle turn line, but on this particular plan, if you stand back and look straight down, like I was saying to you this morning, that center line lines up with everything right down the line, and it lines up with the lamp posts and everything right down the meridian, right smack, pretty much right on. This does give us a little more parking. I also think about sort of, and I'm in one of the categories of senior citizen, and I know a lot of seniors who don't like parallel parking. They have very much difficulty. We have a lot of out-of-town visitors who are retired, and I watch them struggle in downtown in parking. Also, those areas along Ace Hardware, you know, most of the time I think it's, every time I go by there, it's mostly trucks and vans. Almost all the time. And I can't, I just can't envision them parking in a parallel space. They would be parking across the street and walking across and carrying their product. If it's a matter of striping, I'd like to see us try it. And I would also like to maybe have a little bit more time. I spent a half an hour before this meeting. I went and sat by the library. I counted cars coming Park Street to the intersection, how many turned left, how many went straight through or to the right. And of that, in a half an hour's time, there were 64 vehicles. 10 of them made a left-hand turn. Only two of them had to wait for the red light. And when it turned green, there was no cars coming. The rest of them had no issue at all, except one who turned onto Water Street who had to wait for a pedestrian to cross. And one, only one time was there another vehicle coming across and making a right-hand turn where they hesitatingly waited in the middle of the intersection to finish their turn. That was it. There was no holdup of any traffic. I know it wasn't the prime time of day to do it, but it was the only time I had to go take a look and see. So out of 64 vehicles, nobody had to wait, and even one of the city buses went to the left and had no hesitation to make that turn. They hit the green light, no cars coming, and everything went through fine. So I know it's not a real scientific study, and it may not be always the case, because I'm sure there's peak times of the day where that wouldn't flow that way. And I also noticed the other thing, which I hadn't really thought about, and I do this one, is coming to Park Street, if I want to go downtown on Water Street, I always turn at Ray Street and jog down and around. And, you know, at least 15 cars did the same thing. And I was sitting there watching, and instead of going to the light, they made the turn, they made the turn, made the turn. And it was just a constant to the left. And I thought, well, most of those are just going off around like I do. Obviously, go down Lake Street and then back up Water Street. So I didn't see any hold up, any problems or anything as the fluidity of that goes. And then the comment this morning that was made that if there's only two lanes, it'll back all the way up to the stop sign. Well, that's not true. If it backs up anywhere close to Ray Street, people are going to turn Ray Street. I mean, that's only going to be like maybe five or six cars at that point. They're not going to go all the way up to the stop street and sit there and wait and not make a left or a right turn there on Ray Street. So that would be just watching the traffic flow that way. I'd like to spend some more time and go back in different times of the day and maybe have some other people do the same thing and kind of see how the traffic does move. There wasn't any hesitation. And that's 64 cars in a half an hour. It wasn't heavy, heavy traffic, but no problem at all. If we did try that two-lane option and it didn't work, then, like Larry said, we could restripe it and do the third lane there. And then the other question I had, just thinking about it, was if we had a two-lane option, is there a way that we could have like a left turn arrow in that position? If it became like a high peak time in the summer or something where you could do a left turn arrow or a no-turn left lane? No?
No. You have to have a designated left turn lane to make
okay,
a left
all
turn
right. So but we could have a sign that said no left turn. Like maybe in the peak time of the summer when if there was heavy traffic and it caused problems, because the rest of the year it's not going to be a problem at all that I can see. But if it was, we could do it, maybe something along that line. So, I don't know, I'm just thinking, it's just a thought process. But.
And Larry, with the
wait till the commission finishes up. And, I have a couple of comments. I just have a question for Larry. If we did go with this two-lane concept that we're looking at here, right, would you have to change the bump outs in order to, I guess you would have to change the bump outs in order to convert that to a three-lane option and keep the alignment?
No. No, we go back to this option two. These bump outs are shown as exist, and so was the other option.
Oh, okay.
Now we're changing the sidewalk width a little bit, but basically, you know, we have that's where the three lane comes in. Mm-hmm. So we can make it work.
option three has the same flexibility as option two, then, as far as the striping and
right.
And you gain additional spaces.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Any additional commission comments?
I got this one for Larry. On an engineering standpoint, would you have a preferred?
You know, for low volume roads, you can do a lot of different things and people will adapt and use them mm-hmm. properly. I respect the police chief's opinion that not having an opposing left turn lane can create issues, and I believe that that's true. And so there could be some safety issues with that. Obviously, there are also differences in safety on angle parking versus parallel that we've talked about. So any option has some negative and some mm-hmm. trade-offs. Mm-hmm. I do not have a clear-cut preference over these two options. I think either one is workable. The best thing about it is they're changeable if they don't work. Mm-hmm. So really, it's a matter of your opinion mm-hmm. as to how this will work best, considering all of the comments that you've had and making a judgment from there.
Thank you.
Okay.
So you considered this a low volume road?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not M75.
No.
M75, we would not be talking about not having an opposed left turn mm-hmm. On that road. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be talking about angle parking on M75 either. Mm-hmm.
So if you adopt either one of those, it's number two or number three, we have the same flexibility. Mm-hmm. So it's commission call to rescind the previous commission motion that was approved at the June meeting. Adopt number two and number three. Are we ready to do something like that at this meeting? I'm asking the commission any questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been kicking this around for a while.
I think both can support the 10 and both can support
okay. Dan?
I just had one more comment, and that has to do with the amount of traffic on that road. A lot of the discussion has been that Lake Street is the busier street. So we may close that road down for construction, for festival and event during the summer. It's closed down quite a few times. Then you have a two-lane street as the only road through town. It's just something else to send to consideration.
Thank you. Jim?
And one thing I'd like to make clear is that the original drawings were drawn with 10-foot sidewalk. It's actually 11 feet on the East Hardware side because it's 1 foot off the setback.
Right.
So if you put an 8-foot, true 8-foot sidewalk in, you got a 9-foot on this side. And the opposite side, you know, if you're talking 8, this side would be bigger than that side. So technically, I would think you could move that sidewalk from the other side out to at least 9 feet, so they balance. And all that would do is decrease the 13-foot lane there he had drawn mm-hmm. on the two-lane thing to 12.5. This one right here, it would be a trade-off, and it would be actually a gain of 1 foot in the way. If you took 2 foot off this side and 1 foot off that side.
I didn't follow that last
you take
question.
2 feet off this side, make a 9 foot sidewalk, and 1 foot off that side, you'd have a net gain of 1 foot. That would be distributed over the center of the road. Right?
Yes.
So I don't think you necessarily have to make the other side of the street 8 foot just because it's going into provision is 8 foot. You can make a 9 foot and would actually balance on both sides. See that, Mike?
You're talking about the alignment. You'd have
to
the
alignment. Larry threw out in that one drawing 8 foot sidewalk here and 8 foot sidewalk here. Well, I think his 8 foot is talking about 8 foot on the city right away, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So they get 8 foot plus one, you get 9 foot here. So I'd say if you made this 9 foot right here, you'd have symmetry. You'd have this doesn't match up with this anyway. This won't match up with the co-ops over here because they're out a little bit farther. So I don't, and losing 1 foot of the 8 and 8 plan is just going to take 1 foot off the center here. But in this case, you gain it right there. So I don't think when people look at that sidewalk and say 8 foot is too small. I don't think 9 foot is what you're looking at.
Jim, are you talking about 9 foot just on the west side?
9 foot right here.
And then the 8 foot plus the curb wall.
8 plus 1 is 9 foot over here.
Yeah, curb wall.
Okay, we have symmetry here.
Yeah, we clearly established 8 foot would be plenty wide enough for pedestrian traffic, wheelchairs, motorized wheelchairs, et cetera, et cetera. Even with the plow vehicle.
Well, I would disagree that we clearly have established that, because philosophically I think the past commissions were in approval of maximizing sidewalks, and so
that would be by 2 foot over a conditional 6 foot standard.
Well, I mean, 6 foot's not standard downtown.
Right, but you're throwing out scenarios that may happen in 20 to 30 years. If that were the case, you add more.
No, I'm saying that
You referenced.
Well, I did.
The Ace Hardware could be a restaurant, or Pat O'Brien could be.
Because you're building for not 5 years.
Right.
You're
building. But we're building years. Sidewalks for people to walk on, not for cafe outdoor activities. They're for pedestrian, according to what the city manager said.
I agree.
Okay.
With that, with my statement that maximum width sidewalks are better for traffic pedestrian flow.
Sure.
And we proved that on Friday night, stroll the streets, that pedestrians, the wider the street, the better. Or the wider the sidewalk, the better.
Mike?
I don't remember the city manager saying that sidewalks are just for pedestrians and not for other uses. So if I did say that, I misspoke, because that is certainly not the intent or what we've been doing in the downtown for the last 10 plus years, where we've had more and more mixed uses on our sidewalk. When I first got here, I mean, there's been a transition as we've gone through the Main Street process and created a downtown that works and is the envy of everybody in the area, where we have more things happening on the sidewalks than just people walking. Mm-hmm. So that's completely opposite from what I intended to say if I didn't speak.
Yeah. I like Jim's comment, though. You know, I know it's sacrificing a foot off of the west side there, but that would create perfect alignment, the 9 and 9, as far as passing, whether you go with the 3-lane or you go with the 2-lane. So that's Andy?
This is a question for Mike. Michael, we need to have a permanent easement to have that arrangement there, because really we don't own that property, and that 1 foot from the building out, that's not in the city right away.
Yeah, that could change to whatever the current owner at that time allowed. I mean, I did ask if there was interest in an easement. He said no when I wrote that this morning. And I'm not sure what the benefit of perfect alignment is, to be candid with you, when you're looking at a foot on one side of the road or the other.
One reason I said that is you do have a business over there that's running that right there right now, that bike shop. Mm-hmm. So keeping that 9 foot right there would be a concession. You need to give him 10 foot over here to Tim at the co-op. Thank you.
Okay.
Wait.
Discussed it until we can all get confused, but go ahead.
Right now, we have stroll the streets. We have Boynton Thunder. We have vehicles that, along the Ace Hardware section, there is no curb, so they're using their judgment. People are still at that section getting through. The main issue on the travel portion was not right there. It was in front of the True Value, the co-op, where his wares are displayed out, and basically, as we saw today, cutting half the sidewalk off. So you come back down here, people are moving, haven't heard of any fights because people are bumping into each other in front of Ace Hardware. Now we're proposing not to go 4 feet more, but another 24 inches Then you're going to add in a curb roll that will uniformly align vehicles there. Is that correct, Larry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we would gain 2 feet going to an 8-foot sidewalk. Mm-hmm. You would then have a uniform place for all vehicles to stop. You don't have people pulling ahead, way their bumpers mm-hmm. way beyond. Obviously, vehicle design will dictate a small portion of that, but generally, you know, instead of have guesstimation where to stop, it's you'll stop at some point or you'll drive up over on the curb. So I think that clearly adds pedestrian benefit. Again, the two more foot going over what we have existing for that section there, for sure. And one last comment, if the two designs could work, it would be kind of foolish to start out with a design that offers less potential parking before trying the other design out. Because that is a fallback, not the primary, if we're using logic there.
Well, again, I probably disagree with you on that comment, because our job is to decipher information from staff. And when we have the chief of police, the city planner, the street department, and the city manager in favor of a left turn lane, then I think that it would be kind of foolish for us to act as engineers and override their expertise. On the same line of thought, if our city manager explained philosophically why sidewalks have increased, then I think, again, that it would be going backwards if we voted to decrease width of sidewalks. Now, can we, you know, a foot or two, can we work it out? Yeah. I mean, well, we can compromise here. We can make this work. But I think, well, I'll finish there. I think we should go on staff recommendation.
At this point in time, I haven't voiced my opinion, and I'm in the same camp as Tom. I think that this plan does have the option of being modified if we don't like it. So I think we ought to go with this. Now, we're not required to make a motion today, but we could if that's going to speed up the actual design and getting this project moving. Maybe we should make the decision today and to rescind the previous motion from the, I think it was the 22nd of June. Let our planners, let our engineers get the project rolling. So we can get it in before the snow flies. So it's,
I guess just to make sure I'm clear on it, if we chose this option or option three, that wouldn't have anything to do with the bidding process, because it's only a matter of striping.
Yeah.
So that if we wanted to further this discussion and decide if we want that space to be the two-lane or the three-lane, if we want to try the two-lane for a year and see how it works out, and if we get a lot of, you know, or if we want to assess it more, spend some time and really watch the traffic flow and see how it might work. That wouldn't affect the bidding process at this point.
No.
Because either one we could do, yeah, go either way.
But the,
it would save some money.
I think the thing is, the number one thing is safety. And mm-hmm. three lanes provides that. And it's just, I don't think we should compromise it. And that's first and foremost in my thinking.
Well, like I said,
to go with this process, number two first, it's flexible to go to a two-lane if so desired in the future, so with angle on both sides. So I'm in favor of this recommendation right here that Larry's brought back to us today. He synthesized the information, all the talk we did this morning, and like I said, it's some of the cosmetics of it can be adjusted, and it's... I think we ought to stick with the professional opinions.
Larry, could you bring up the other drawing? Let's focus on that one for an equal amount of time, and then look at the figure that Ariel was at.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Mr. Mayor, may I say something as just a citizen, a tourist coming through here?
Sure.
I hear, you know, we can go on this road and we can go on this road and we can do this or that. When I come to Boyne City, I only know one way to get to one place. And if you go through Petoskey where they have narrowed those roads to one or two lanes, it is an absolute nightmare to get through. And if I'm going to make a left-hand turn off of this road, you know, all your tourists are going to be there. Your locals know the shortcuts. Your tourists don't, and you're going to get people bottled up. We got people bottled up in Bayview. We got people bottled up downtown. Locals don't drive downtown in Petoskey because it's one lane. But we know how to get around. Our poor tourists, they're just stuck. Be careful. Don't get your tourists stuck in a place on a corner where they're going to have to be just stuck there and waiting because you don't want to put a left turn lane in. I mean, I go to all the cities all over Emmett and Charlevoix County, and those places that move those left turn lanes out, it's terrible for those of us that are not locals and don't know how to get around with the shortcuts.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And while you're discussing that, I have to go to
You're still on.
Me too.
No, I'm not. We just got the aerial that Commissioner Gaylor was looking for.
Is that what you wanted to see?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we had the old one for quite a while, and if we needed to just ponder this one. I think Laura had a great idea that, you know, if we're not going to vote on this today, then maybe do some more traffic surveys. I just think it's shooting ourselves in the foot to automatically discount this one right off the bat. The 8-foot sidewalks are clearly wide enough. Again, adding 2 more feet from what they are now, a defined barrier. I think people will be happy with that width, definitely. And you know, again, everybody has inputs, and yes, we do take input from all sources, but at the end of the day, we make a decision based on that input. And I think we're discounting. I think we're discounting the abilities of the motoring public and our traffic volume on overall for 365 days a year to automatically discount the 2-lane. The beauty of that is, if at the end of the day, it's determined there is a massive issue, it will cost us basically nothing to restripe it.
Something.
Yeah, basically.
Not a lot.
I said, yeah, basically.
But not a lot.
Right. And, the parallel along the Ace Hardware side makes absolutely zero sense. Talk about safety issue and holding people up, and again, Commissioner Sampson brought up vehicles, longer vehicles would take up another lane. You're going to be down potentially 3 parking spots, or you know, it's not like they're parking to go to a restaurant there during business hours. You're going to have various contractors and things like that pulling in, and entrance and exit on the angle is far easier for. Yes.
Do you think that it would be any more disastrous than the parallel parking on the O'Brien side right now, currently as we have it?
Yeah, based on the nature of the business that's there. Yeah, I would ask, I mean, Jim White could comment more on that as he's, you know, there all the time. Jim, would that be, you know?
Well, people with trucks, Gary's got a truck, they can park on this side easier, but it's easier to get out. There's less traffic coming this way in front of co-op.
Headed northbound.
They park it over here, they've got to worry about a lot more traffic when they go back out. Mm-hmm.
And they can always make a right turn and go to a diagonal parking on Water Street, too.
That's what I just said. That's the part that they don't like to park as much because it's actually harder to get out of there than just to get out of here.
More traffic going on water.
Yeah, a lot of traffic on water.
South Park at a normal.
Here they're coming possibly from three directions. There they're only coming from one, right down Park Street.
Well, I guess all in all, and I know we rehashed this over and over, but just to ask you, this plan will work this way, or it would work with three lanes. And the O'Brien side could be a 10-foot sidewalk. The Ace side could be an 8-foot sidewalk, and we wouldn't have to change any real configuration at all, except restriping if we decided to do so. Am I correct on that? So that would actually, even though the lanes are going to not meet up exactly right on the dot, it would be, you know, for a three lane, it's not going to be that much offset.
Yes.
And so that would actually be a pretty good locked in concrete kind of solution, maybe at this point, to go forward on the project. If we wanted to still, if we still need to hash through the other and maybe spend some time and watch the traffic flow and think about that striking problem. Let's see which way we would do it. It wouldn't hold up the construction.
Well, I think it's time for a decision. Motion or no motion?
I'll make a motion that the Park Street project be modified from our last vote to reflect angled parking at 45 degrees on the east and west side of Park Street, initial striping be two lanes, and the sidewalk on the east side be 8 foot, and 10 foot on the west side.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Town?
Yes.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
No.
Needhammer?
No.
Sansom?
Aye.
Motion carried.
I'd like some input from the commission with regards to a special meeting on August 7th with regards to this. We talked about that a little bit briefly this morning to see if that's a viable option for awarding bids on that date, or if you'd rather have it continue on the 14th.
Will it help the
timeline? Yes. We're concerned about that extra week at the end of the end of the season.
I think 7 days is able to start on the front end.
Winter can set in fast sometimes. Yep. Well. Okay.
We would need a motion to set that as a special meeting for that purpose, unless there's any other purpose.
Okay,
if you wanted to bring it up.
Do we want to make it a noon meeting or an early morning meeting? What suit your schedule as far as Gary, Lauren, and Christine?
I'm flexible, maybe, or whatever. I don't know anybody else. I'm myself available.
The August 7th meeting for what?
It'd be the 7th of August.
Okay.
Personally, I'd prefer an early morning meeting because that's the only item in the discussion.
Well, there was earlier discussion that the commission had about possibly bringing something back on Kirtland, but I don't know if that was still something you were considering or not.
That's your timeline. What are you recommending? Are you going to have that information by then at that point?
I may know if it's not going anywhere by that point. And if that's the case, it's going to have something's going to happen automatically. That it wouldn't necessarily need to come back. So I don't know that there is a specific urgency for having that. If you sign something that comes up, we can always add to, I can request, you know, the mayor or
couple of commissioners, add that to the special meeting. I don't see it at this point, though.
Why don't we just...
It's election day, we'll just keep that on.
Oh, the 7th is...
Good point.
If that's going to cause a potential conflict, I don't know.
You have something to say?
Logistically or otherwise.
I can't read.
It's easier during the day.
Okay.
So...
If we had an early morning, 8 o'clock meeting, perhaps?
No, that would suit me.
8 a.m. on the 7th? Okay.
Okay. I'll make a motion, our next meeting will be August 7th at 8 a.m. Roll call.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay.
Thank you for your work.
Next item, a new business is Marina Fueling Request. Consideration to deny the request of Boeing Carousel for a permit for fueling in the F. Grant Moore Municipal Marina. Michael, can you do the summary for us, please?
Sure. Recently, we've received a request from Carousel Adventure in Boyne City to permit private fueling of their commercial boat at the small boat launch. Section 7428 of the Boyne City Code of Ordinances allows the city to grant a permit for fueling at the marina. To my knowledge, this section has never been used and a permit has never been requested or granted. In talking to other communities about this issue, the city of Charlevoix basically sent back similar language, almost identical to ours, so I don't know if there's some boilerplate language that was used at some point. Since there was no guidance or past practice on this matter, I consulted our city attorney and insurance agent. Both were very cautious regarding this matter and said that we were not required to issue any permit, and that if we did, it should only be done under very strict conditions to protect the public, the environment, and the city if something went wrong. The specific request is to allow their boat, and their boat only, to come to the small boat launch to refuel with diesel fuel from a transfer tank in the back of a shore-based pickup truck, which would be parked in or near the ramp. The truck and the tank that they're talking about is about 90 gallons of diesel fuel. It's in the back of a pickup truck, which has a commercial grade fuel hose and nozzles similar to what you'd see at a gas station. I've seen the equipment in question, and it all looks new and in very good condition. They would pump the fuel from the tank to the boat while the boat's still in the lake. It appears that such an operation could be permissible under state and fire regulations if certain conditions are met. And I've included copies of the NFPA regulations and an email that we got from a member of the MDEQ talking about that issue. Our insurance agent informs me that due to very limited standard insurance coverage for pollution and environmental issues, if there was a spill, we would only have $10,000 worth of coverage. And that compares to most everything else where we have about $5 million worth. He suggested that if we were to grant such a permit, we should require Carousel Adventures to obtain a minimum of $5 million worth of coverage that specifically lists the city as an additional insured and provides for environmental and pollution coverage. Another general liability coverage really wouldn't create anybody anything. The requesters have indicated that they would be willing to do their fuelings on times and days that the city would allow, possibly avoiding some busy times like weekends and when there were events in Veterans Park. I looked at the possibility or thought about the possibility of moving the requested fueling operation to the main boat launch further up the road. And although that is further from the general pedestrian traffic, usually that one gets more of the brunt or the boats in there of wave actions when there is a wave actions on the lake. And it's also usually a busier boat launch. So you'd have possibly one bay, launch bay, having somebody fuel in it while you've got other boat traffic going in and out. And I didn't know if that would be a good situation. The main reasons the company has cited for the request is avoiding water in their fuel, using special additives in there that they mix into their fuel, and reducing their costs by about $1 a gallon. Cost brings up the point that there are existing fueling options for this business. The Harbridge Marina is an existing city-based business that provides lake fueling service. Local gas stations also sell this type of fuel, and they could take their boat out if they wish to a relative's business in the business park where they keep their transfer equipment and fuel supply. I thought it should be noted to the commission that when this issue first arose, our harbor master Barb Brooks provided them the option of trailing their boat onto shore and filling it there. So basically, taking their boat out of the water, still in the marina area, but over the shore, either in the parking lot or on the grass, so that if there was a spill, it'd be something that'd be a lot easier to contain rather than it getting into the water. They have indicated that the extra work in that operation negated the benefits of the self-fueling that they are proposing. That option, in our opinion, would not require, like I said, a permit from us. And if a spill did occur, it'd be easier to contain. The fire department, which has concerns regarding the water-based refueling proposal as well, thought that the land-based would be a better compromise. While the risk of a negative occurrence may be small, and these people seem to be reputable and have good equipment, the results of one could be very unfortunate and expensive to deal with. My recommendation to the commission is that despite my desire to help a fledgling business get started, I do not feel that the benefits are worth the risk, and recommend that the City Commission not authorize the issuing of a permit for fueling in our marina. And I provide a number of options for the commission to consider. A is to postpone it for further consideration or information. B, which is the more detailed one, was if you are considered granting or would like us to move forward with considering a permit for the that it be limited for the remainder of the 2012 season, that it be for Boeing Adventure Parasail for their one commercial vehicle, and then with the conditions that are listed in items 1 through 6 on that. And there may be some other options that the commission may wish to consider. I know we do have representatives from Boeing Parasail here. As a side note, I mean, I'm very glad that this business is in our community. It's a great new attraction to our community. I have relatives here. Like I mentioned to the commission earlier, the last week, and a number of us took the advantage of going up and out in on the parasail, and everybody had a great time and couldn't say enough good things about the operation. I've got mixed feelings with regards to this whole thing, but in looking at to protect the cities and the citizens and the pros and cons of this, I had came down with the recommendation that I did. I'd be glad to answer any questions, or we have the other people that may want to address the commission too.
Good. Josh, would you like to address the commission?
Yes. Joshua Grove, Point Parasail. So that's exactly what it is. It's a small operation, and it's just 80 to 90 gallons that we'd be doing. So as a business, we have something to lose, and if we were to get this permit, and so we'd go out of our way to make sure that nothing would get dripped into the water. Normally when we did fill up, we'd have 3 guys. There'd be one at the truck, one at the boat, and the other attending the hose, making sure it didn't go in the water. And so it's all brand new equipment. It's just as you would find at a gas station. It's got the, if it were to overfill, it would automatically stop. And there's also a pump on the gas container itself that you can shut off, but there will be someone there to switch off if you need to. And so the ordinance does have a permit process, because it can have the opportunity of giving you the permit to do this, and by doing so there are several pros. Money is a big thing. If we were to fill up 3,000 gallons in a season, that's close to $3,000. If we filled up, we bought about 1,000 gallons of diesel for $318, and at that same time, where we can fill up is at the Harbridge. It was about $4.20. So that's huge savings, and for a small business, think of all the things you could do, and we're looking out to expanding. you know, maybe try and become a water sports company instead of just parasailing. Kayaks, you know, jet ski rentals, you know, that's not there yet, but it's the idea. We want to expand and make Boyne City, you know, the place to come to. And, you know, we chose Boyne City instead of Petoskey or Charlevoix. Pros and cons all the way around, but we felt, you know, Boyne City was the best spot, even though Charlevoix or Petoskey had more people, you know, more eyes driving by, seeing the shoot up in the air. But still, we thought that Boyne City was the friendly place to, you know, they'll work with you, which they have. They've gone out of their way to help us, you know, operate and be successful. And we're doing pretty great right now. And so we're the first to ask for a permit. That's because, you know, we're the only real commercial operation in Boyne City. So we asked to find solutions to help us be able to fill up instead of reasons not to. You know, we agree that we could do it early in the morning or late at night. We can do it certain days. We want to work with you guys, and we have something to lose. If this permit was issued, we'd have something to lose if we screwed up. So we'd go out of our way to make sure that that wouldn't happen. And another pro is, you know, fuel quality. We want to make sure that, you know, we can keep a better eye on the fuel quality, because we have, you know, guests taking up in the air, and if an engine fails, you know, that could create problems. And we want to make sure, you know, the fuel is under control. We have a better eye. We've been filling up the harborage, had no problems, everything's good. But, you know, we have filters on the boat for water and, you know, other substances that we have maybe found, and we just want to make sure that everything's under control. We put additives in our fuel, and you know, keep a better eye on the actual water in the tanks. And again, all the equipment is brand new. Like Mr. Kane said, he took pictures and even stopped by and to check everything out. It's even out in the parking lot. So we ask, as a new business, not to look for ways to say no, to look for ways to say yes. You know, we are willing to work with you guys, you know, to help us successful. You know, money, you know, fuel. So it's not just financial; it's safety. You know, safety is huge. Fuel quality, and then, you know, looking to expand in Boyne City to make this the destination to come to. You know, because we could have gone to Charlevoix or Petoskey, we came here because you guys are great and, you know, do great things to help us out. So thank you.
Thank you, Josh.
I did take those pictures that Josh mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a quick way for me to put them up on the screen, but I've got a picture of their truck, their hose, and their filtration equipment, if anybody's interested in taking a look at that. But it was all, like, brand new equipment. I can pass it down if anybody wants.
Petoskey, do you wish to weigh in on this at all?
Sure. I think it would be something the city could do without a lot of liability, because it is just a real small operation, between 80 and 90 gallons every time they fuel up. And, you know, it is brand new equipment that does have a shut-off nozzle. It can be turned off at any time. It's fully attended. I mean, it's not like you put the nozzle in and you leave and walk away. It's fully attended, so the chances of having a spill are really minimal. And like I say, it is a really small operation. So it's somebody told me that you can't even fill up your own boat. I didn't know that. You actually need a permit to fill up your own boat. And that's what I was told by somebody. Josh and Mike, my son here, they didn't even realize that was, necessary thing to do, is to get a permit. They did check with the DEQ, and the DEQ was okay with it. They said there was no ordinance or nothing against that, but they didn't think of checking with the city. So, and then at one time, we also the boys also thought about burning biodiesel. At this time they haven't burned any, but they they always wanted that option, but they're not sure the moat is set up with the right seals to burn bodies. So, and so that was one thought at originally. So, I don't think it's a huge liability for the city, and I don't know what the city has in place for all the existing gas stations and storm drains right now, where you got 10,000 gallon or 12,000 gallon tanker trucks filling up with huge hoses and stuff. What happens when somebody spills or pulls off a gas station hose or something right now? It seems like there's a lot of other issues, I guess my point is, that are so huge compared to this little 80 or 90 gallon fill-up that these boys are proposing to do. So they're not they've been buying fuel from Mark, and they haven't had any problems with it, but there is they do like the idea of controlling their fuel, and they do put additives in their fuel, but what they can do at the boat when they fill up if they want to. So I mean, it's not like you're shutting the operation down or anything like that, but it is a nice convenience and a little bit of money savings, which when you're starting a new business, that's always a big thing. I think it would be a good thing for the city to do.
Thank you, Gary. Mike, did you have any
questions? I have nothing to add.
Okay. Department heads? Bart?
One of the things with the city's marina is we're a clean marina, and they have a set of best practices. There's nothing that says you have to adhere to every single one of them. However, they look at all the different items when they come in and do their inspections, and that you can pass or fail. I mean, that can determine if you're considered a clean marine or not. Basically, the best defense against pollution to the environment is to minimize the opportunities for the potential of pollution, and water fueling directly on the water certainly has the potential of a hazard. I understand that their equipment is new. I understand that they keep it attended. But what I don't see is any safety measures if there was a spill. Do they have the booms? Do they have all those things necessary to address that? That's certainly something to consider. And then it is not allowed for the personal use vessels in the marina to fuel at the docks. Mm-hmm. They all either know they have to pull out on the trailer and go to a gas station, or they go to the harborage for their fuel. I mean, it's not allowed on the docks, and there's reasons for it. Mm-hmm. There's some safety hazards there, and I thought, and I can see that it's not the perfect solution for them, but I didn't see where having to pull it out on the trailer to do the fueling on land, so if there was any spill, there's the potential of the land absorbing some of that before it goes directly to the water. Mm-hmm. I thought that was meeting them in the middle. Mm-hmm. Gave them the opportunity to still do that without jeopardizing the water directly.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Chief?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor. You folks know my background with the DNR. I've responded to many oil and gas spills on the water from marinas that are in the business of fueling boats. And I want to back up for just a minute, because I want to commend these guys for being the entrepreneurs that they are. And I think that's great. And I like their business, but I'm concerned about what may happen. And most marinas have containment measures. They have dispersants. They have people on staff to handle those at the water, and they practice those things, and they know what they're doing. So to introduce a boat, a couple guys, and a truck that don't have that kind of equipment is almost a recipe for disaster. Worst case scenario, you have to plan for it. 90 gallons of diesel fuel ends up in the lake. I'll let some other agency take care of that. That's their job, to monitor the lake. But 90 gallons of diesel fuel washed up on the shore of Boyne City is not going to be nice. And Is it going to happen? I hope not. I know these guys don't want that to happen, and they plan for that not to happen. But I think, on the other hand, is you have to look at, again, worst-case scenario, and it could happen.
Thank you. Do we have any other department heads that wish to make a comment? Citizens' comments. We'll move to discussion with the commission. Laura, would you like to start, please?
Just a couple of quick questions. Your boat, what size is it?
It's a 28-foot.
Okay, so that is easy to put on a trailer, fairly easy? If you needed to fuel that way?
Put on a trailer?
Uh-huh. I mean, it's not a huge, huge boat. It's a nice-sized boat.
Right, yes and no, so... Size or its pros and cons to pulling out of the water.
Right. And you're fueling right now at the harborage?
Yes, we have been.
Okay, and has that been, that's not been an issue or a problem, or is just the cost of the fuel, or?
Well, it's cost is one of the biggest things, and then, you know, we have, there's possible issues, you know, with quality of the fuel that we just want to have under wraps and make sure we know what's going in the boat, to make sure that the boat gets the proper fuel and there's no issues. As of right now, there have been no issues. That's why we have, you know, special filters on the boat. But, you know, you never know. Sometimes batches can go bad, and we want to make sure that we have full control. You know, we know what's going in our tanks and whatnot, so.
And that's about 90 gallons a week? You're quoting the 90 gallons. It's 90 gallons every time you fill up, but so how many times do you fill up?
About 60 to 90 gallons every time we need to fill up.
Yeah, and that's how often, though?
It depends on how busy we are.
I know, but
it
on the average.
It could be anywhere from, you know, every couple of days to, you know, once a week.
Okay. All right. And when you set up your business, where did you plan on getting your fuel? Was it from the harborage when you initially did your business? And
we planned on doing it exactly what we did, is buying a 1,000-gallon tank and then having a smaller tank and then, you know, doing just that, filling it up because of the fuel savings, keeping an eye on the fuel quality for safety. You know, it's just one of those things where we're willing to work with you guys and get the proper safety equipment. It's something, if we were to get a permit and something were to happen, you know, take it away. You know, we understand, we have common sense. We say, hey, we messed up, you know, with a couple drips or whatnot, we'll go away and we'll do it the proper way. But, you know, the truck's almost brand new, all the equipment's brand new, and we're all common sense, you know, guys to where we're not going to, you know, obviously you can't guarantee anything ever. Anything, even away from fuel, but with what the equipment is, where it's at, and the situation, I think, you know, it's a great idea just to give our small operation the opportunity to save that money to put towards, you know, hiring more people, to expanding, and you know, so we totally understand that, you know, we can get the insurance. You know, I've talked to my insurance company, and they have to get back to us. Find out the details on that, but you know, from what it is, we want to be given the opportunity as a commercial business to be able to do this, and then, you know, if there's a problem, then we would automatically either pull the boat out, go out of that way, or we'd fill up at the harborage. But as of right now, we've filled up before, you know, we were filling up with the truck, and we had absolutely no problems. 3 to 4 guys, our whole team, was there to help, and we had absolutely no problems with gas drippings at all. And you know, obviously, we found out about the new rules that we can't do without a permit. And so we're here to ask for the opportunity to get the permit and, you know, be allowed to just, you know, early in the morning, specific days, we've got the equipment in case there was an accident, to contain the spill. We want to work with you guys, you know, help us, help Boise City become more successful. And so that's, that would be real great to get the opportunity to get that permit.
Well, thank you for answering my questions.
Derek?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Gentlemen, thanks for being here today. First, I would like to echo what Chief Gaither said. Absolutely applaud you for your entrepreneurial spirit and activity. Fantastic. It's a risk, but you know, from great things come potential for risk, and you've taken that step. I'm of mixed feeling on this situation. I'm going to kind of echo City Manager's comments. You know, I think sometimes government at every level can kind of get in the way of, you know, things moving along smoothly. On the other hand, you know, we've got information about potential spills, you know, diesel, that type of thing. I'm not an expert in spill abatement. I don't know what it would cost or what kind of training. You know, I pull a 20-foot bass boat in and out. That's my experience dealing with pulling boats out. But one of my questions Commissioner Sansom asked, and that was, do you have to fill up, you know, once a day or whatever? And if it's, you know, once every other day, and it sounds like the opportunity has been afforded to, if you do put it on the trailer and pull it out, it just make that maybe start a half an hour earlier in the day or whatever to do that every couple of days. Realize it may be an inconvenience, but I think that would be a viable option. And I have no doubt that your conscientious and your crew will do everything possible. I can't move forward without knowing what, you know, Chief Gaither pointed out as far as his experience with the DNR. You know, what's required, what items do you have to have on the vessel, the filling crew, and so forth. And one of my questions is going to be, did you already purchase this filling equipment for the pickup? And obviously, you already had, you just, because you were going ahead and planning on doing that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we got, you know, approval from, you know, DNR and the other organizations that said, yes, you're good. Unfortunately, we didn't have the knowledge to, you needed a permit.
Where would you be buying your bulk fuel from? You mentioned you had potential concerns, which obviously with diesel, there's always a concern of fuel. That's why most diesel engines have the water filters in them. But where would your...
Blarney Castle?
Mm-hmm.
Blarney Castle.
Okay. Now, do you already have this 1,000-gallon tank set up, and did you get all permitted for that already?
Mm-hmm.
And where is that located? The main...
Martin Bay Road.
Okay. So you've met with the DEQ, the containment. Did they discuss spill procedures at that location? And
it's our operation with our excavation business.
Oh, I see. Okay. I didn't realize it was tied in another business. How long does it take to trailer and remove your boat right now? Or have you had it out of the water yet?
To depart from the dock, to go all the way over to the boat launch, pull it out? It's a good question. Mikey, how much time do you think that takes?
Probably half hour, 45-minute process. I have to go get the trailer with the truck. It's an 8,000-pound boat, so it's not 18-footer pulling it out of the water.
Well,
it's
I'm
not a real easy process. So I'd say probably 45 minutes.
Okay.
No.
I'm just trying to, you know, look at realistically, if it's 45 minutes, that would be added to that day knowing, okay, we've got a fuel tomorrow. Would you be able to add that more, you know, to your day, start a little bit earlier, pull it out, and then fuel on land, and then relaunch the vessel. I don't really see it as a huge hindrance to do that. You know, if it was 2-3 times a day, I could see a very valid argument, you know, for the water refueling. But, you know, if it's 2 to 3, 4 days, you know, obviously in the busier times, you know, it sounds like 2 days. So every other day, you'd be pulling it out in the morning, and or at the end of the night, when you know you have to fuel. So that's. I'm trying to look at it logically. Believe me, I would like to come forward and help you any way I could. And I could by voting for a permitting process, but I think there's viable issues that are not strangling your business operations to the point where it would be futile. So that's my viewpoint on that. Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you.
Jane? Well, I do understand your cost issues. But I do believe the potential is still there for some kind of environmental issues. After listening to the chief and Barb, I agree. I don't believe it's worth the risk.
Tom?
My concern, according to the ordinance, it is a permissible use with a permit, correct? So if they apply for the permit, I mean, which is what they're doing, I mean, it's a permissible use. That's where I think they kind of got us.
Not a great.
Is it class one fuel?
Can you expand on that? Because it does say with supervision of plants. Or for refueling any vessel, such as dock spirits, provided that the required permit is first obtained from the proper officials of the city and the city marine regulations, the orders of the harbor master, or other authorized officers of the city are complied with. Provided further that this provision shall not apply to vessel supplies or provisions other than fuel. So, by applying for it and submitting to your request of insurance, isn't it almost something that we have to do?
Not according to the city attorney, no. Mm-hmm. He says it's basically a permissible, it's something that we can allow. His opinion was that we were not required to permit it. I think I might have mentioned that in my memo too. Especially since we don't have any procedures with regards to it and have never done it before. And I could just point out one other thing, too, it might be helpful. The only reason that a permit's required is because they're looking to do this in the city marina. If they were doing this someplace else in front of somebody's house or whatever, I mean, it doesn't get rid of the risk of a spill or anything like that. It just removes us from the process, and then no permit's required. I mean, if you got a permit and worked out a deal with the Harbridge Marina or Sunburst to do it in their boat well or whatever they do over there, you know, they can do it there and not need a permit from us. This request is only coming before us because they're looking to do this in the city's marina. Mm-hmm. And again, the city attorney said this was just an option, not a requirement. Mm-hmm. So I hear we're talking about a permissible use with regards to a zoning issue with regards to, okay, if the ordinance basically says you can do this or it's an option for you, then if they meet all the other criteria, you have to allow it. The city attorney did not apply the same standards here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the interpretation.
Well, I'm not in favor of granting a permit for fueling at our city marina. I will be right up front about it. One of the things I see is that it would set precedents for other people to do the same. The other thing is unintended consequences do happen, and I'd rather not the city have the liability to clean something up in case that the company was no longer in business or any other unforeseen, just eliminate all possibilities of it. But, you know, I certainly appreciate your enthusiasm, and we really appreciate you bringing your business to Point City. And a couple of thoughts I had, too, is, you know, if you're going to use 3,000 gallons of diesel fuel over the year, have you tried to negotiate anything with the Harbage Marine as far as, you know, a guaranteed gallonage or anything?
Yes, we have at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we could do on price. It was set at what they set it at.
Okay.
So, yeah, we did attempt at the beginning of the season.
Have you looked into the cost of the $5 million liability policy, what it's going to cost you with you, and consider that to the offset that you'd possibly save on 3,000 gallons of fuel?
Yeah, I've talked to my insurance guy, and he's getting back to me. He's compiling the information that I need, so I apologize I didn't come prepared with that in time, but fortunately it takes time with that kind of information. So yeah, absolutely. I'm still in the process of getting that information, and you know, I can come back here. You know, maybe let's say the decision's not made this season, but let's try and do it for the next season. So you know, we continue to be successful. Maybe not in a week. You know, maybe how about you know in the future? So maybe I ask not to say no now, but let's figure out solutions to say yes in the future. So a yes or no answer isn't needed now. I mean, we're not going to go out of business by having to buy the more expensive fuel, but man, that's crazy amounts of savings to be able to apply to expanding or other options in a business. So
I certainly understand that. Yeah. Again, I appreciate your commitment, your enthusiasm, what you're doing as far as attracting new business to our community. Again, I'd say I'm not in favor at this point in time. You could bring the request back next season. We'll get it again, but at the present time, I'm not in favor of granting it. And you can, if any of the other commissioners have any further discussion or questions? If not, I'll call for a motion.
Well, based on it, based on Josh's comments, I mean, if you just want to leave the issue open-ended for further information, you really don't have to take any action. Mm-hmm. You can just leave it.
They can't do it right now.
No, I'm not going to issue a permit unless the commission says that it's okay right. with issuing a permit. And so if you want to leave it open, fine. If you want to, if you say no, or at least no for this season, that's an option as well, too.
I think I would say no at this point in time, and you're always welcome to come back and approach us again, you know, bring it back to the commission next season. But at this point, I'm not comfortable with doing that.
So. I think if there was some more spill abatement, equipment and protocol and things that might ease the. I do have a question about if they had accepted standard abatement equipment and training and so on and so forth. Would that still allow, if we in the future change it to allow them to do that, to issue a permit? Would that still allow us to maintain our clean marina standard if their abatement equipment and training met an accepted standard? Do you know?
I don't know for sure. I believe so. I mean, with the clean marina, it's not a, if you do this, you're absolutely out. Mm-hmm. They have recommended practices.
Sure.
If the commission chose to allow this or wanted to explore it further, I certainly, you know, would contact them and ask mm-hmm. them, you know, their opinion on this and what they feel we would need to do mm-hmm. to address it and ensure that it's a safer safer thing to do.
I mean, that is the crux of the issue here, is fear of diesel fuel in the water, right?
You know, another thought, too, is most of you weren't on the commission at the time, but we've gone through five or six conceptual marina plans, and, you know, early on, going back about 10 or 11 years, one of the top 10 goals or 15 goals as it is now was the expansion of the marina, improvement of the marina. Mm-hmm. But in every one of those conceptual drawings, the sale of fuel has been nixed as far as, you know, mm-hmm. previous commissions thinking. So it's just something to add to the thought process here. I just, and again, something I did mention is you do want for one, you do for all, as far as precedence. And it's, I don't think it's the right time for it.
Mr. Mayor, do you mean all businesses, all, not just private boat fueling on their own? You mean representing your business?
Well, it could be other businesses requesting the same thing.
Right.
And, you know, that they could have a mobile gas supplier, you know, come in and ask for a permit, too. It could be people, you know, want to fill their own boat up, you know, with them. You know, it just could be business or private. Mm-hmm. We could get into another long discussion.
Under the what I read from under the state statute, I forget if it's the state or the fire protection code, private vessels are not allowed either way. Mm-hmm. We would not be allowed to issue a permit on it. It's only for the state only. I think it's the state only allows it for commercial vessels.
Do you know what class one, Mike, means on the
Class one is like gasoline.
Okay.
Class two is like the diesel fuel, things of that nature, the heavier fuel.
Okay. Do we need to have further discussion? Is there a consensus that there's no permit to be granted at this time? They bring it back next year? I think it'd be better to have a definitive answer for them. Mm-hmm. And you still have the option of bringing it back.
I would like to keep the door open that if they went through these processes, that they could return to us with possibly a different verdict. Mm-hmm. But it would fall on them to do the process.
Mm-hmm. I concur.
Okay.
I move for consideration to deny the request for Bourne Carousel for a permit for fueling in the F Grant Moore Municipal Marina.
I'll second it. Roll call.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. This time we're going to discuss good of the order.
Backhoe.
Oh, no. We got another one to go. Backhoe out. Yes, I was wondering why there's still ones here from the
EIS. I think we just moved to the good of the order.
Yeah,
it's funny.
It is good.
He really likes our meeting so much, Ron, he just had to come back.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just going to say yes on that and skip it.
Consideration to approve the purchase of a JCB 4CX15 backhoe from EIS equipment at the amount of $93,818. And authorize the city manager to execute the necessary documents. At the time ending, please do a summary for us.
Not me this time, Ron.
No, you're going to do it. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. As you know, this year we put aside funds during the budget process for replacement of our backhoe. It's a 1998 model. It's 14, coming on 15 years old. You can see up here, it's rusting, and some of the pieces are starting to fall off. We had an operator step onto the steps the other day on the battery box, and it came off. The pins on the back are worn, and there's other maintenance to do on the equipment. been a good piece of equipment. It's lasted us well past its original life expectancy when we got it. Mm-hmm. And it's been 8 years. We've had it 14, 15 years. So it has worked for us well. We've gone out to bids to look at replacement equipment. We've looked at the Michigan Bureau of State Purchasing Program for pricing and availability. And JCB is available through the state purchasing program. We looked at the specifications for the equipment, tried to maintain a piece of equipment with the same capabilities that we have in our existing piece of equipment, and looked basically at the JCB and a couple of other machines, but specifically we also looked at John Deere because there are some other dealerships in the area. To match the capabilities of a JCB machine, you have to go to the next larger size than John Deere at an additional $50,000 cost. We can't find any better match of capacity capability in the price range than the equipment we had. And it gets basically well within our price range when we know the budget. So I'm going to recommend that you authorize the city manager to purchase the JCB. And we documents are necessary. If you've got any questions, Dan is here from AIS, or I'll see if we can answer your questions.
Yes, thank you. Andy, do you have anything to weigh in on this?
No, I would agree with Dan that JCB is in its size class is the best built piece of equipment on the market without having to go upsizing to perform as well. And I would say that this machine is starting to get weak. I use it a couple times a year up at the airport moving bin blocks. And you can tell, you really got to work it to pick them up anymore. It's due. It's time.
Yeah. Dan, do you wish to comment on anything?
I can comment a little bit on the process of selecting or reselecting the same machine as you have, because the new model is pretty much the one that matches the machine you have. And we went with Dan through the needs for what you do, what they do with the machine. And I tried to compare to different options, a little smaller, a little bigger machine. And this is really the machine that fits to that need. And to explain that, the critical point of that machine is for the backhoe being able to move heavy pieces, manholes. And so I look at the lifting charts and we were, just like Dan said, we have to go much bigger on John Deere, and the smaller units cannot handle it. So that is why I believe it's a proven machine for 12, 13 years. Same one that you'll be getting. That's pretty much what it boiled down to.
In your opinion, what causes something to rust like that? You know, it just...
The operator isn't here, is he? Salt, mainly salt. You know, all of the equipment is being in and out, in the heated, outside of heated garage, salt. There could be a little bit of improvement. I don't know how much they use devices to wash, you know, power wash and stuff like that. That might extend the life for 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. That might be something you might look into, because I don't know their practices.
Yeah.
Dan? Just a comment on that. That, if there's another picture there, Mike, it's a little bit closer, if you can pull that one up. I think it's that one here with the one next to it. What causes that? That's the battery inside of that box. Salt on the outside, the battery on the inside, and for years we didn't have adequate power washers or equipment to maintain.
And we have that now.
Mm-hmm. Andy's bought a new steam cleaner. We don't come down with our equipment to use it often enough, but that is the reason. If you went around the machine and the rest of it, other than that battery box area, it's not in that bad shape. Mm-hmm.
This looks pretty nice.
Is this kept indoors?
Most of the time, it's not all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions for
Well, I don't know a lot about equipment, but I'll take your recommendation that that's what you need, and I'm sure that we need a new piece. But I just had one I guess one question. It comes with a 2-year warranty. Is that the best warranty that you usually get?
Industry standard on equipment is a 1-year warranty. The second year is not a full warranty.
Okay. And is there an extended warranty available?
The second year is
Is the extended, and that's as far as it goes?
If you go higher, it falls. It's pretty much insurance policy. Mm-hmm. Just like with any other vehicle, what is actually, if you look at standard, it's 1 year, just like Dan says. GCB, knowing their product, and also wanting to be aggressive on the market, they go extra 1 year, so you get 2 years, and that's at no additional cost.
Okay.
There's a warranty available up to 60 months at cost. The way your guys maintain and treat the equipment, I don't think it's necessary to spend money on insurance. That's my recommendation, but there are municipalities, they do spend the money on extended warranty.
Okay. And then this should last us a good length of time again, right?
Another 13, 15 years of life, I hope.
I might recommend looking at replacing it somewhat sooner.
Yeah, okay. Because this one's only worth 15 now, right?
We've had some major repairs, some stuff that went into the machine and resale value. I don't know if a 10 to 15 year life cycle is the best point to trade it in.
Okay. I guess that's about all the questions I have. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mm-hmm. Dan, could you just reiterate on the record all the uses that you currently can think of between you and Andy, what the backhoe is used for, to articulate the need?
We use it to install water main, do water main leaks, or service line replacements. We have set manholes, and he uses it to run small storm sewer projects, and he has set manholes and built projects. When we first went to this size machine, we were looking at doing more of the smaller projects in-house.
Mm-hmm.
We still do some small projects, but staffing is down to the point where we are more of them out now. We still need the capacity to go out and lift a manhole in and out of a hole. And this is also an extended gripper machine. It's a 15-foot backhoe that can extend out to 20 feet. Mm-hmm. When it's sitting on a hole at a water main break or something else and the soil's moving, you're out of full reach to be able to get down to where they're working and the hole's safe. Mm-hmm. This machine's been looked at, and we've looked at size for machines several times. This is the best fit that we can have in our price range. It'd be nice to have an excavator that we could go with a smaller backhoe.
Mm-hmm.
A smaller backhoe won't do half the jobs that we do need to do, and we don't have enough work to justify an excavator. So this is where the compromise comes in.
Yeah. And there are also times that we do utilize that in the cemetery too. Unfortunately, there's been spots where alley lots have been sold and we can't get through and we need the extra length of the dipper to be able to get in and dig a grave, or our small JCP can't because it can't get close enough because of the extra grave in the way. So.
That's the only question I have.
Gene? The one you got now, I'm pretty sure of the answer, but was that brand new when you got it, or was that a used one?
It's new, and that was the second, this will be the third JCB in a row. We bid basically all of the machines that were out there and looked at them. When we bought the first one, it was sold by Michigan Tractor. They didn't have their own backhoe at the time. Michigan Tractor and Caterpillar was selling these machines before they passed them. Yeah, this is still as good a machine as there is out there in any size.
I guess that's all I got. Tom?
I'm going to support. I've got a couple questions. During the warranty period, where do you go for service? Do they come right to the city here, a service truck?
I can explain. You have two options. The warranty is warranty combined between the manufacturer and us as AIS, who is the provider of the warranty. So if there's a warranty issue, we come to you, and there is one single charge for the trip, only for the trip for the vehicle to you. So that's limited to $250 per warranty claim. If we have to come here three times to fix it, it's going to be one charge of $250. You can opt out of it and bring, just like with the car, bring the machine to our shop. In that matter, you wouldn't pay the $250 and you take care of it in house. Most of the times, it is done at $250 as one charge per warranty claim, and that is your only, it's like a deductible copay, if you will. So yes, we come to you. We've got six trucks. They cover the northern 15 counties out of Traverse City, if you will. That's our hub. But our service trucks, people live in different places. The closest to you would be either Traverse City or Gaylord.
Is this equipment built in the United States?
This particular equipment is built in UK. It's a UK, JCB is a family-owned British company. And yeah, we look in John Deere. And as I said, I have only two options. Go smaller, which is not big enough, or bigger, which is much more money. So we did look with Dan for options for a US-built machine. There isn't such.
Dan?
He just answered partially the statement I was going to make. US machines, there isn't such. None of the tractors are made in the United States. The best there is assembled in the United States with components.
Components, yes. I understand that. Was there any additional comment by staff or anybody else? Or citizens? I didn't. Most of our citizens and nobody's left except our staff. That's why we directed the commission. But is there any further?
You're a citizen, right?
You're the press. You don't count.
I see how it is.
I've only got one more comment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for the audience that doesn't know. Basically, the new price up, total price on the new machine is $135,750, and the Michigan State pricing is $109,818 plus a trade-in. So there's over $25,000 discount going through the state program.
Thank you. We're open for a motion from the commission.
I'll go ahead and recommend that the commission approve the purchase of the JCB 4CX15 backhoe from AIS Equipment. Set for $93,818 and authorize the city manager and staff to complete the necessary documents.
I'll second. Okay.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Good of the order. Tom, would you like to start?
Just a reminder, we've saddled staff with lots of things. We're pretty busy. Hannah Street, Douglas Street, the fireworks ordinance, the facilities, alcohol on the street, so. We've got a busy year ahead of us. A lot of things in the in the fire.
Laura?
The only thing I want to say is congratulations to Boyne Thunder. It was an incredible weekend. I had to work that whole weekend. We had more people than I've seen. And the consensus of a lot of businesses who I talked to said it was even busier than the 4th of July weekend. In fact, so were we. So just to say, it brought a lot of people to town, and they spent a lot of money. So it was a really successful event, and my congratulations to you.
Derek?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll echo those comments from Commissioner Sansom on the Boyne Thunder. It was absolutely fantastic. Good job to you and Main Street for putting that together. And again, it's one more thing to put us and keep us on the map. Boyne City name is getting out there more and more. The only other thing I have is tied into another business. We just recently went to the ribbon cutting for Classic Instruments in their new location. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be watching a TV show recently. It was a reality show called Fast and Loud about cars, and you know, they make different hot rods and things like that. They redid this old pickup, turned it into a fabulous thing, and as they're reading off the list of things that are in it, they said the classic instruments gauge package, like it was the de facto standard. I'm like, that's a Boynton-y. So I just want to throw that out there. To kudos to Classic Instruments for their awesome job of, again, putting and keeping Boynton City on the map through a high quality product.
Thank you. I'm good this week.
I had several people call me in regards to the fireworks, and I know we've got it on the agenda to come back to us with a plan. But did receive a detailed email from our chamber director, Mr. Bowman, and his request that we rescue the 335 bays so that we can control at the present time. And I'm not sure how soon this is going to come back to the commission for...
we said 90 days last meeting.
Yes.
So 3 months. But I think it was with the intent of keeping an eye on what the state's doing.
Exactly.
That's why we did the 90 days. And if I understood his letter correctly, he wanted to see us bring it back before that. But I think the reason we did the 90 days was because we wanted to wait and see what the state does on it. They may revise some of the language in that, too, in the bill. So.
Or the holidays.
Yeah, they may revise something. And I did want to say I appreciate I got the list of the 10 so-called national holidays that the state designated.
It's the federal designation.
They say federal, but their law says national. So I always have a dispute with that one. Okay, semantics, you know.
The next regular commission meeting is Tuesday, August 7th, and that's scheduled for noon, but we had a motion previously today.
Mm-hmm.
Or
8 a.m. Yeah,
8 a.m., not noon.
Eight. Well, correct, 8 a.m.
8 a.m.
8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the regularly scheduled commission meeting is August 14th, 2017, at 3:55 p.m. Call for adjournment.
One second.
Roll call.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.